Hey everybody, today's episode features Sammy Mejia. Sammy and me are really good friends and we go back, of course, to CSKA times. The fraternity never fails me once again. And I promise there will be a guest on that are not related to CSKA so that you guys don't think I just have CSKA friends on here. Sammy, today he talked about his career, how he went about to make the decision to leave the D-League at the time and go to Europe and start his career, how important he thinks it is to realize that early enough for a player. We also talked about his time in France, his time in Turkey, as well as in Moscow, obviously. But the bulk of our discussion is about retirement. It's about how he went about to make that decision, how hard it is for a player. Nevertheless, it happened during the pandemic, but that's not any easier. And I feel like this conversation can help a lot of athletes that are currently contemplating about retirement or going through retirement and are thinking about the next steps. So if you like this episode, please share with your friends. Please share with the athletes that may or may not retire soon or have retired. Please subscribe to this channel and to all the audio platforms as well. And I hope you enjoy our conversation. We had lots of fun and lots of laughs. So enjoy. Have fun. I'm pressing the recording right away. There's no time for chit-chatting around. I just want to make sure everything works on your end. It's we're good to go.
Yeah, so far so good. How do I look? Am I squared? Am I squared away? Am I centered? Am I good on the visuals?
Always, you know, like your smile is some contagious. Anyway. So as long as you're smiling, you're good.
Okay. Good to hear.
Thanks for coming on, Sammy.
Oh, it's my pleasure. My pleasure, Ben. My pleasure.
Yeah, we've known a while. You don't have to tighten up. You can stay loose, Sammy. I'm good.
Again,
our CSKA fraternity doesn't fail me once again. And people start thinking that I'm just inviting guests that I know through CSKA, but there's other guests coming. Don't worry.
Right.
The bulk of our conversation is going to be about retirement, you know, like how to go about it and how you came about it and what struggles you dealt with early on. And I think that lots of players struggle with similar things just trying to reflect, trying to help them prepare for that step and make it, you know, it's a huge step because it's you redefine your identity basically. So,
right.
But before we go to that, I wanted to make sure that I'm tagging countries on my page.
Okay.
So, is it okay if I tag Dominican Republic or
yes. Do your thing, bro. Tag away.
You're just gonna have to later on send me the city or which city. Actually, tell me. I'm not a history buff and I'm not a journalist. I'm not trying to be, but I try to let everybody or know everybody's story a little bit better. And I just would like to know how you came about how the steps were for you for coming from the Dominican Republic to the US, and if you what expectations you had, did you come with hoop dreams? How were the initial years for you?
Okay, actually, it was my parents who kind of came over and migrated from my dad from the Dominican Republic and my mom from Cuba, actually. So I was actually born in the States and I grew up here, and my Dominican roots come from the family that I have over there. Obviously, you know, grandparents and aunts and uncles that, you know, that were related to us through family. But I myself have never lived there. I'm just obviously deeply tied into the culture and the family part of it. But as far as growing up, you know, the hoop dreams, that didn't become a thing until, you know, after I've been playing for a handful of years, you know. And initially, you always just fall in love with playing and you just love being around other guys and being competitive. And, you know, coming from a big family, I have five older brothers and we all played basketball. Wow. So I was the youngest out of the bunch. I was the one getting picked on and getting bullied on the court. And I guess that kind of fueled the fire as far as my competitive edge to try to get me to keep up with them. And, you know, unfortunate for them, they always say, people always say the youngest is the one who kind of benefits from like the experience of the group. So I was able to suck up as much as I can from their from their knowledge and their experience in playing the game and take it and use it for my advantage. So I'm grateful for my brothers. They started playing and they helped me fall in love with the game.
So yeah, that's a quite embarrassing moment for me for not knowing that ahead of time. But you know, like I could easily delete this now and we can start over. This is how it is. I should have known that actually, but I never really investigated further. I just saw, you know, it's Dominican Republic, and I thought you came here as a child. So
No worries.
But you, after playing at DePaul, I know that much. You had a short stint at the G League, right? And Fort Wayne. So you left to go to Italy midway through the season, and I was wondering, how did you go about making that decision to leave and just move on to go to Europe? Because a lot of like the follow-up question would be, do you think that lots of players hang on to the NBA dream too long and think and stick around a little bit too long and miss out on opportunities in Europe to define or chase another career? Is that something that you were aware of early on, or did somebody like push you to that decision? How did you go about doing that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, for me, basketball has always kind of been like a way out. You know what I'm saying? So obviously the dream is to be in the NBA. But interestingly for me, when I got to Fort Wayne, we had a couple of guys that have been in the D League. It was called the D League at the time. Yep. They've been there for 5, 6, 7 years. And it made me question like, okay, what's the ultimate goal? You know what I'm saying? Okay, NBA is like the dream. But as far as being a professional athlete, what's the most important goal? And for me, it's to maximize your skill, you know, to a point that you can benefit from it. You know, all those years that you put into it, like, you know, at some point, you know, especially for athletes, we have such a short span career. You have to start thinking selfishly, how can I benefit? How can I maximize from this God-given talent and ability that I've been blessed with? And, you know, I played well in the D League at the time, and I just got to a point where I saw a lot of people that made me imagine myself as, I can be that guy if I don't get out of here quick enough. Regardless of how good or how bad I was playing, I've always felt that if you were going to make an impact, or if something was meant to be, especially in the sports world, you know, you come, you play, you make an impact, and you go. And I felt like sometimes waiting hurts you more, because not only do you give yourself a chance to like fluctuate, right, to go up and down, obviously, like, you know, it's the sports world. You're playing great. If I couldn't benefit from getting a call up or getting a deal in the NBA when I was playing at my best at the time, and I was in the D League, I had to use that leverage at least for a European opportunity for me to get started. Because if you don't get drafted and you're in the D League, yes, it's an opportunity, but financially, you're still starting from scratch pretty much, at least at that time. Now it's different. They're paying guys a lot more. So I always thought, okay, let me get in. And if it's meant to be, it'll find its way back to me and I'll find my way back there. But for the meantime, let me maximize and let me take advantage of some of the perks of being a professional athlete, and let me travel the world a little bit and see something different. And at that time, the Italian league was like pretty legit. You know, it was a strong league, and I saw it as a challenge, and I saw it as an opportunity that if, you know, things went perfect and things went, you know, well, that this could be a stepping stone. It's not always, you know, about feeling like you're taking a step back or like giving up on your dream. So I looked at it with that mindset, and I approached it with that mindset, and that was kind of what led me to make that decision. Because you know, and at that time, you know, I left in February, so I knew it was only a few months, and I was like, what should I do? Should I go add something to my resume for a few months, or kind of just, you know, stay in the D League and finish the season with less chance of potential job opportunities in Europe the following year, because I have nothing to kind of like show the teams or the clubs out there that I'm capable of doing. So I chose to go with that. And, you know, I've enjoyed every step of the way after that.
That's a lot of self-awareness, though. I mean, like, that's not many players would think that way that early in their careers, you know, like to think ahead by, you know, seeing the examples in front of their face and, you know, kind of like mirroring the possible future to your right in front of your eyes. And it's not easy. I'm always interested about the essentials, you know, like I'm trying to dig a little bit deeper. So where do you think that comes from? Like, how did you really were able to reflect on that?
I think that comes from being the youngest in a big family. You know, I've seen a lot of things that my family members went through, whether it's personal, sports related, job related. You just see things and it wakes you up to things that, one, you get to learn from through other people's experiences. And I've always been like that as a child. You know, I'd look up to my older brothers and sisters and some of the hardships that they went through, you know, dealing with friendships and dating, you know, like having a girlfriend who broke their heart. And you see that and you're not going through it, but you're like, man, that sucks. Like, look at him. He's like broken. So for me, it's always held a small place in the back of my head. And then, you know, in any given moment, those thoughts, those memories, those experiences would kind of like just pop up in my head and remind me to be aware and mindful as much as I can. And okay, did I make every perfect decision in my basketball career? Absolutely not. But I think for the most part, I've at least allowed myself the chance to listen to some of those voices and to try to be smart, because I, you know, basketball is such a short-lived experience that I just tried to maximize it as best as I can.
Yeah, so that's very observer-like. Like, you were growing up as an observer, observing the outside, the surroundings, and I'm sure that all those ups and downs leave a mark on you as well. So that's probably right. So when you went to Europe, did you have any kind of expectations the first year? Like, is that kind of like expectations versus reality that kind of hit you while you're there?
Yeah, you know, and it's funny you mentioned that, because like, which is probably most Americans, you know, we think, you know, I have an NBA dream. I was borderline. I was so close to making the NBA. I'm just going to go to Europe real fast and just like dominate and just like, I'll be right back. And it's like, you know, you have that rude awakening when you get there, like, okay, these guys can play. You know what I'm saying? These guys can play. The rules are different. The leagues are different. The expectation is different. And the experience is different. It's a total 180 from what we were used to growing up playing basketball. So you have that kind of shocking experience when you step into practice, let alone the game, just that practice, and to see the tempo of the practice and how aware guys are about plays and, like, you know, and details and how to, you know, have different options for one play and like how these guys memorized 20 plays and like they're able to just like run them on the drop of a dime. And like, those are things growing up where we don't really put too much emphasis on, because we're more about talent, you know, ability, go get it done. So it was definitely a shock, and it took me a month or so to get used to it, like, and just to feel comfortable on the court, and, you know, to kind of like find myself in the European aspect of my career. And it was definitely a shock. I remember being a bit confused and questioning, like, man, like, are they that good, or am I not as good as I thought I was? Like, it was a humbling experience, because you can't, I mean, some players do, some special players, but it's hard to just come over and like get it right away and just like apply everything right away. And, you know, you see that every year in the Olympics and in the World Cups, how guys go and they struggle. And it's like, it's real. It's not as, you'd be surprised what a simple tweak in the rules and the style of play, how much that can affect your game.
Yeah, that's I think that aspect is underrated, and you know, like, people or players or coaches who have experienced both sides, they're kind of like, they understand why things are happening. That's why coaches also in Europe, they usually give that time to players, to rookies who come over for the first time, because it's just, especially coming from college, from, like, I mean, it's the same game, but it's a different angle of the game, I'd say. Like, it takes a while to adjust. Like, you're adjusting to time zones. It takes some time. Instead of like 4 or 5 days, it might take you 4 or 5 weeks. So you just have to really play it by ear. And if the player is really cognizant of that, you know, with time, if he's open to the experience, yeah. I think that makes that will make the process a lot easier as they
Absolutely.
Go for both, you know, because as the frustration grows on one side, the frustration will certainly grow on the other side as well. So
yeah.
I think that's the biggest challenge. I looked a little bit also your years in France, 2 years, and there was a jump the second year in France in performance. What do you attribute that statistical jump and in general just performance? You got MVP. What do you think was the biggest difference in that from the first year in Cholet to the second year in Cholet?
I think those years in France were pivotal for my career because those were the first years where I actually felt comfortable enough to call Europe home. Mm. And I think that made a huge difference for me. Like, you know, my prior experiences were okay. You know, obviously all the boxes weren't checked out because you'd have some good experiences, but, you know, you'd have financial issues with some of the teams and, you know, you'd have all kind of issues that, you know, could be relevant to a lot of players in, you know, who play overseas, who know about some of the obstacles that we face. So when I got to France, that was the first time where I really just got to focus on basketball because everything else was taken care of. Everything else was set in place. And then on top of that, I had a relationship with the coach, Erman Kunter, at the time, who was just phenomenal. He loved me. We had the same thing in mind as far as how we, you know, how I could play and the potential and how we saw things. And I just think that was one of those situations where it was like a match made in heaven, so to speak, where he found a player that he'd liked and I found a coach that I'd liked. And together we kind of just fed off of each other. And, you know, the team, I had a great team, a great group of guys, you know, we kind of bought into everything together. And that was the first year where that was a team where we practiced together. And then when practice finished, we showered, we went home and we were in each other's apartments playing video games, hanging out. So the level of unity that we had as a collective group and, you know, that just made that group so special. And, you know, when that translates to the court, it just makes everything so much more easier when you have that genuine relationship with one another and you want the best for each other and you guys all want to win, then it's about finding what works best. And in those 2 years, that first year was a bit of a learning curve for us because I actually signed a little late in that first year. So it took me a while to get in shape and to get used to the style of play and to kind of, you know, make friendships with the guys. But we ended up going to the finals that first year. And so then when we won and then when we went back, it was just like picking up where we left off. So I had no drop off when we came back. We just came off a finals championship. Same team coming back. We probably added a couple role players, but the core was there. The group was there. So we just picked up where we left off. And it was easy to kind of glide into that second year with the same momentum. And we just carried that all the way through the season.
Yeah, I think it's a huge advantage when you bring back the whole team to the second year and everybody's already adjusted and knows their roles, knows each other well. And chemistry, whether it's right or wrong, I think it's underrated. The chemistry aspect is underrated in the States compared to Europe. Like,
absolutely.
Yeah, like, you know, like everybody has their own perspective on it. I experience both good and bad chemistry, whether it's coach or player, but that definitely makes a huge difference. You can't really manufacture it, but you can put it in place. Like I said, if the team was clicking the year before, you try to bring it back with the same guys as much and you know, maybe like just a tweak here and there in the roster.
Yeah.
But the chemistry, it's so hard to find, but when you find it, it's absolutely, it makes the whole experience more joyful and memorable.
And I honestly think that's part of the challenge in playing in Europe, because in Europe, it's rare to get multi-year deals for a lot of guys. So it's kind of hard to bond and fall in love with the place because it could be so short-term where you're kind of in and you're out. And then, you know, to get a group of guys and a team and an organization to be able to buy into something, I think that's special. I think that's what a lot of the higher level teams in Europe have. You know, they have a core, they have a group of guys and they obviously build around that, but they're able to establish a culture and, a core group of guys that can carry the way and just build on it and become stronger off of what you already have. So I think a lot of times that's some of the biggest struggles for foreigners as well, is that they don't have that opportunity to kind of buy into something and be there long term and plan long term and think, okay, how can I improve on this for next year? Because you can be one player on one team and then go to another team and have a totally different set of expectations that are presented to you, and you have to try to adjust on the fly and be productive. So, you know, that's part of the challenge of playing overseas.
Yeah, it's every year, every team has their own challenge. Like teams like if they bring over players, like they seek, or the successful teams that bring players that who are able to embrace the team and that and identify themselves with the team, with the fans.
Right.
Those are gonna be the favorite players, but also more liable that more successful teams, I think, that are gonna have this identity with the whole culture, you know, with the team, with the country, with the city. That's very valuable in those. I mean, I think it's for every professional club in any city. If you identify yourself with the whole city and represent, that's gonna be helpful for everybody involved.
For sure.
I just want to click on shortly on the CSKA year. I know that was I want to ask a typical journal question. How was that year in CSKA? Well, I'm not a journal. I'm not trying to do that. But it was clearly, because I was there, it was clearly a frustrating and a difficult year for you.
Yeah.
Without going in depth about the year itself, but I would like to know of how you dealt with the frustration. How did you go about not playing as much as you were used to playing,
right,
as much as you probably expected to play, for whatever reasons it happened? But it's every player at some point may go through that experience as well. So I'm wondering what your advice would be and how you personally dealt with that situation.
Oh, definitely, especially coming off of those years I had in France and the momentum that I've kind of built individually as a player, it was a huge adjustment. It was a shock. It was something that I definitely wasn't expecting. But in spite of the struggles that I had that year, I was able to learn so much from the time that I was at CSKA. You know, the players, the level of knowledge and experience around me, you know, you got... Okay, in the beginning, it sucks. When you don't play, I don't care where you are, who you are, it sucks. But then, you know, at some point you have to shift your mind, because I'm like, I'm going to be here all year. So it's like, I'm either going to like suffer all year or find a way to like get through it, be positive as much as I can and find the good in what I'm doing. And I started shifting towards that like halfway through the year. Because in the beginning, you know, it's, obviously, it was a big step for me to get to CSKA. So, you know, as a player, you're like, okay, I don't only want to get there, but I want to like play there and have an impact and perform. And then coincidentally, that was the lockout year and Kirilenko comes and he's like Kirilenko, you know, and he happens to play my position. And, you know, so I have nothing to say about that happening in that situation. It was just unfortunate for me. But with that being said, again, I've learned so much. And that pain and that struggle actually helped my years after CSKA, because I understood the importance of sacrificing for the team. I understood the importance of playing your role. I understood I was able to help other guys who would come on the teams that I've been on and had similar roles where they were playing and they were the man on other teams. And now they come in to play a role. And I can be like, look, I've done that. I've been in that situation. You got to find a positive. There's always a way to be productive. There's always a way to give something to the team and to kind of like make your mark, right, towards something good. And managing that was tough. Luckily, I had my family with me and, you know, I had your friendship. Obviously, we'd hang out and grab lunch and dinner a couple of times. And that was always great. And in general, the guys on the team were fantastic. So there was no way for me to let that, my own personal experience, like, allow me to be selfish enough where I'm going to ruin a year in a locker room full of like amazing men who are experienced, talented. And, you know, I just tried to learn from them as much as I can. And I did. And I carried a lot of the pain that I went through internally. I've carried that and used it to like helped me have a better second half of my career. And I totally benefited from that, in my opinion. And I'm glad to a certain extent that I actually went through that, because it made me appreciate things a lot more afterwards.
Yeah. So basically you became the big brother.
Yeah. Because it's humbling, man. It's humbling when you're young and you're coming up and you have all this momentum, and it's like, okay, everybody's either as good as you or better than you. So like, find a way to fit in. And that was the challenge for me. Like, it wasn't just, I'm better than everyone, like I have to play. It's like, no, you don't have to play. If you don't buy in, if you don't, you know, do things correctly, if you don't, you know, master the plays and be productive and, you know, fulfill the role and the expectation that a coach has for you, like on those type of teams, like you have to buy in. And it took me a while to learn that, but then, you know, I was able to learn it and kind of use it going forward.
So you went forward for 8 years in Turkey. You spent 2 years, 8 years on two teams, and Banvit, and then 5 years at Tofaş. But why did you choose to stay in one country for that long? I mean, for like, obviously possible contractual reasons aside, but was there any other aspect that you took into account that you liked and you wanted to stay in Turkey and continue your career there?
Actually, I would say my first coach in Banvit was the coach that I spent my last 5 years with in Tofaş. So my first year in Banvit after I left Ceska, like we've built such a great relationship. And, you know, after that year that I was in Ceska, I had one of my better years that upcoming year in Banvit. And I was like MVP of the regular season. Like we went to the finals that year. So it's like, you know, you come from a place where you learn through pain. You know what I'm saying? And then the next year, I was able to benefit from that pain and from that experience. So that, along with the relationship that I've built with that coach, Orhun Ene, I just fell in love with Turkey, and then the people, the culture, the food, obviously the food is incredible. And it really is a great place to be, especially with a family, you know, like the city took a liking to my wife and my daughter at the time. And it was great. That was a place that truly felt like home, like, you know, outside of my years in France, that place really felt like home. And the league was strong, and it was great. And, you know, we were competing every week, and we were playing in Euro Cup, and it was just an overall great experience. And, you know, I signed there for 2 years, and then ended up extending on my second year. And then kind of when that finished and played itself out, my first coach, Orhun, got the job in Tofaş, and then he called me, and it was just like the rest was history. So, you know, I wasn't planning. I didn't have like a long-term plan to be in Turkey, but the way things played out, like it was a no-brainer for me to stay there. I was happy, and I was, you know, playing well and succeeding. And I was just like, you know what? I feel like I found my place where I understand the basketball. I like the country. I feel comfortable here. Let me just stay here as long as I can and try to make the most of it. And I'm grateful for it.
But you're not hesitating to go to second division once he called you, because they started off in second division and the goal was to move up, and you guys did. But were you not hesitant on that?
I honestly was for a little bit, because it's, you know, a lot of the expectations of other people and a lot of like the outside, you know, influence makes you question those kind of moves. But again, I have so much trust and confidence in Orhun as a coach and the organization. And, you know, they kind of presented me the plan on what they were thinking and how they were like trying to map out their route to get back up to the first division. And then, you know, we kind of had an overview of like what the other teams in the second division were like. And, you know, when we evaluated the situation, I felt like it was something we could do. And, you know, I took on the challenge, and it was honestly a risk, because if that didn't work out, things could have turned out really different for me. So, you know, I took a chance on my coach. I took a chance on myself and the organization. And fortunately for us, we were able to do it. But we had a few scares in that year as well. So, you know, I'll leave it at that, but we were able to get it done.
Now, kudos to you. Like I said, it's a really risky decision, you know, you took a chance and it worked out really well. So like, I mean, I don't think many players would have done it, you know, no matter what the love is for the coach or for the plan itself. It's just kind of like, I don't know if I want to go.
Bennett, I'll tell you right now, I was the only one who was okay with the idea. Everyone else, my representation, everyone else that I knew was against it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like everyone. So it was like a complete leap of faith. And, you know, I chose happiness over like, you know, the pursuit of something else. And, you know, it paid off.
Love it. I love that. So you listen, was that a gut decision?
That was an absolute gut decision and a one-on-one thing between the coach and I. He pretty much promised me he was going to do everything in his power to get us where we needed to be. And, you know, I kind of promised him the same. I was going to be committed and be all the way in and commit to what that meant.
Yeah.
You know, because I've never played in the second division before. So I'm like, I don't know what second division style basketball is like. I don't know. Like,
yeah.
So I was like, I promised to adjust and to give my best to buy into what works for that environment. And he promised the same. And the club was behind us. And, you know, I put all my eggs in that basket. And
big time.
it worked out.
that's the perfect way of saying it. So speaking of that, retirement, essentially COVID finished the career, but was that already in the makings in your mind, was that the final nail in the coffin for you? When did those thoughts start creeping in?
I mean, no, those thoughts were in play for the last, I'd say, year and a half of my playing. But then, you know, it's retirement is such a tricky thing because that's, you know, when you're young and you're in the heart of it, of your career, you're just like, oh, I can't wait till I'm older. I'm just going to like walk away. And then like you get older, right? And then you're just like, it's so hard to walk away. It's just like you find reason after reason to try to convince yourself that you can still go and that you still got it. And then, you know, it's hard to let go of something that you've loved for so long. So, you know, I flirted with the idea for a few years, actually, before I chose to hang it up. But the whole pandemic situation happened and we went home and gyms were closed and I didn't touch a ball for 3, 4, 5 months. And it was just, I know what it takes to like play at the professional level, at a high level. And I was just like, mentally, physically, emotionally, to try to build myself back up to that after what was happening during the pandemic. It was just too big of an obstacle almost for me to try to face at that point in my career. And, you know, we were in the States already for a while and the kids were getting comfortable. And it was just, it's one of those things where it's like, it's a gut check, you know, like, are you ready to like pick up and go and be in the unknown? Or are you ready to like start planning towards what's next and kind of getting a head start on trying to figure out what you're going to do post basketball? So it was definitely a hard decision. I cried when I finally like said the words out loud and like retired, even though I was like ready for it. But it was a bittersweet moment for me.
So I can only imagine, like, it's, you put like your whole life into this, basically, you know, and it's there, it's coming. And is it like the part of what's scarier, basically, making the decision of what you're leaving behind, and it hurts so bad to leave that behind because you feel like you physically, like if you really put yourself to it, you probably could have played at some level, I'm sure. So is it more scary because of what you're leaving behind and it hurts, or is it scary because of what's next? What's the bigger evil there?
That's a great question. I would say it's a combination of both. You know, it's like having a favorite pair of shoes or a favorite hat, and then, you know, and someone asks you for it and you don't really use it anymore, but it's your favorite. And it's just like, yeah, I don't use it, but it's mine. You know what I'm saying? And like basketball was mine for as long as I can remember. And as long as I played basketball, I didn't have to worry about anything else. Like, it was just basketball. Like, it just eliminated everything else. I didn't have to think. I didn't have to plan. I just knew I had to be in the gym. I had to stay in shape. And I had to focus on what was next as far as basketball.
Yeah.
But when you take that away, now you're pretty much stepping into a room with nothing on the walls. You know what I'm saying? So you have to kind of re-sketch who you are as a person, as a husband, as a father, because your days are not centered around the basketball schedule anymore. So now you kind of have to orchestrate and like organize and plan your life on what's next. Because when we retire, we're old, but we're young in real life. You know, if you're in your mid to late 30s or even your early 40s, some guys play to their 40s, like you're still young. You have half of your life left. Like, so it's hard to face that when you've never had to think about it. Because by the time you're in high school, you know if you're a decent player or not. So it's not like you have to go to college and be like, what do I want to be when I'm in college? Like,
no, some people go to open gym. They think they're great. They think they can be great. When I was in the States, I was playing a church league as well. Like on the off season, I was facing people that were like, man, I should be playing in the league. It doesn't always work, but I know what you mean. It doesn't always work out that way for some people.
Yeah. Yeah, but the dream is always like that. You know, it's always like some grand picture of like what life could be. And like, you know, that's always front and center to everything that you do. And it's like, once you imagine that and once you kind of like idolize that picture to a certain extent, like it makes everything easy because you just have to focus your attention on one thing. And when you walk away from that, you're walking away from every habit that you've built up until this point in your life. So now you have to restructure your days. You have to restructure your habits. You have to restructure your identity. You have to ask yourself questions that you've never asked yourself for the last 35, 40 years.
Yep.
Who am I? What do I want to do next? What am I interested in? What am I passionate about? And that was the hardest part, because as long as you're playing basketball, even if it's not, you're not as good as you were, it's something you're familiar with, so it's easy to stay there. But when you let go, it's like, you know, walking into uncharted waters and trying to figure it out as you go. So it's a humbling experience, and you know, you learn a lot about yourself at that time.
Did you go I'm like, you had your family around, so that helps, I'm sure, a lot, you know, to have like a supporting cast around you that gives you little bit of sense of comfort and you know, figuring it out together of what the next steps are.
Right.
Because it's I'm sure it's obviously a team effort that it takes at home to really help each other with this next step. And like I'm wondering if you put any work in terms of like reading up on it or talking to some ex-teammates that are may have retired as well. Did you look for that advice of like, not necessarily of what the next step is, but how to deal with this identity. I want to say identity crisis, but it is essentially some sort of new identity that you're trying to find within the workforce. So what did you put any kind of research into that?
I actually did. And coincidentally, I had the worst luck. Like everybody who I asked about retirement, they were like, dude, play as long as you can. It's different. It sucks. So I was like terrified. I'm like, oh my God. I'm like, am I going to enter into a depression? Am I going to get divorced? Like,
but that was before you decided or after you decided?
Before I decided. Because, you know, once you get to a certain age and you kind of feel like, you know, father time hits everybody. So everybody thinks about it. There's a point in your career, I don't know when exactly it is, but it's different for every player, where you start having the thought, you know what I'm saying? And that could be 4 or 5 years before you actually retire, but that thought comes. And then you see guys that you played against, they're not playing, and then you bump into them, you talk, and it's just like everybody who I spoke to about that always missed the game. They missed being around the guys. They missed being in the locker room. They don't miss being sore. They don't miss the pain. They don't miss the grind of the two-a-days, but they miss the basketball world. And it's those conversations and that advice that you get from people that walked away from the game, it's like a warning sign that's like flashing in front of you. And it's it it creates some level of like fear. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. Wow, am I ready for that? You're like almost afraid. And it's like, I'd rather just play till I can't walk anymore and like kind of let the game kick me out.
Yeah.
Because it's hard to like embrace that and to know that that's what's coming, you know, like that's the hardest thing. So, you know, I would ask a couple people, but you know, it was just, that's the kind of thing where no matter how much, you know, until you go through it, it's different for everybody. So, you know, I had a bout of depression, and I, especially if we're tying into a pandemic where I couldn't leave my house.
Yeah.
So I was just like, man, I can't do anything. Like yeah. I went from like, you know, traveling and being busy all the time to like, now I'm locked in a house. My kids are doing school online. So it was a different experience, but it was definitely an awakening one for me as well.
We had this conversation right throughout midway through the pandemic. I think it was maybe during this second lockdown. I'm not sure, like beginning of this past season, but I was in a bad place. Certainly I was I had a sense that you were not as bad as my place was, but you know, you had a combination of pandemic and finishing a career that, you know, that you put a lot of thought into. So, like the miss going back on that, what your friends and your, other players told you, you know, the locker room, the bonding, this like the chemistry that we talked about earlier. What did you, because there's a lot of tribal instincts that we have.
Absolutely.
I'm like, people that have listened to my podcast before, they're going to tell me, oh, you're just talking about it again. But yeah. There's like this tribe, this book Tribe by Sebastian Junger, and talks about like how we're really codependent within the group, and the group makes us happy. You know, the group dynamics give us purpose. And you know, a team environment, whatever role you play, like you said, like people, guys who struggle in a team, they still can serve a purpose. And you find you are serving a purpose as a team member, and you feel like you're self-worth. Right. You lose that, all of a sudden you lose purpose, you lose self-worth, you lose your confidence probably as well to a certain degree. Mm-hmm. Like those things trigger a lot of emotions that you never had to deal with. And like, I was wondering what like the biggest thing that you miss from those times that you can reflect on right now, that you feel like when you look back on, it's like, man, that was something that I will probably never feel again. And it's got to be cognizant of those things that certainly not going to feel again, being on the floor in front of 15,000-20,000, and playing and enjoying, somebody's like throwing bottles at you in Turkey or whatever. We got coins thrown at us. But you know, like, what are those things that you will think you will be, you anticipate cherishing the most and reflecting onto the most going forward?
I think, first of all, that's a great question. But I think the coolest part about being an athlete in general, especially, you know, for us as basketball players, I think it's so cool how each year we meet new people from different backgrounds, different cultures, different environments, and we become one so quickly. And I think that's one of the most beautiful things that sports can give you, is the ability to meet new people, form a relationship with them, and buy into something bigger than yourself. And I think, you know, you evaluate each season and you compare the beginning of the year to the end of the year, and it's just like two totally different dynamics. You know, by the end of the year, you're all brothers, and it's like, you know, you do everything together. And I think that's what that's what I personally miss most about the game. Obviously, being on the court, playing in front of all those fans, and, you know, having huge plays and making game-winning shots, all that stuff is fantastic. But some of those bus rides, some of those airplane rides, being in a hotel and just, like, just annoying each other to the point where we're, like, dying laughing and just, like, oh, those moments are the best. You know, sitting at a dinner table together on the road somewhere and, like, exploring and getting lost in a new city, like, those are the things those are the moments that I cherish the most, because that's what the game has given me, right? Outside of like the norm, outside of, you know, being in a uniform and like shooting a basketball, like just the friendships and the relationships that you make with people from all over the world. And to this day, some of my best friends that I've made are European people that live in a different country. And I cherish that. And I think that's it's a beautiful gift that basketball has given me. And it's something that I cherish and will cherish for the rest of my life.
Yeah, it's more about appreciating the fact that you had yeah. the gift of going through that, you know, and mm-hmm. where you don't have to regret of not doing something or not really like basketball players or like pro athletes in general. They go through so many different emotions, especially in a team sport, where you said you have so many different dynamics, so many different people that you've meeting every yeah. year, each year, and each year, even each month can be a new experience, just because like certain laws will trigger certain reactions in the locker room.
Absolutely.
And that gives you also, again, a new learning experience, and then you're able to grow again as a person. And the more those kind of things you experience, the more you are mature. And that's why retiring at 38, a lot of times you are more mature than, let's say, some 50, 55-year-olds, because they've like some like classic office jobs where they didn't get to experience yeah. all these things. They didn't get to experience yeah. different cultures. They didn't get to experience learning, meeting as many new people, because they've just yeah. been going from 9 to 5 their whole lives, and that's all they know, and they're happy with that. They're content. But yeah. whenever you are as a pro athlete traveling so much, it's also at some point hard to find this feeling of contentness or satisfaction, because you're always like this, get these adrenaline rushes, yes. get these highs.
Yeah.
And I think that's yes. what draws you back in. And that makes it so hard when you retire, because you lack these adrenaline spikes, these dopamine spikes, mm-hmm. you know, whatever it
absolutely.
Is. Absolutely. Like, because it's, I mean, I always look at it also from a hormonal standpoint, because our bodies are weird and
yeah
and those experiences are, you know, like worth a lot going forward, just because if you're able to reflect
absolutely.
Like you are, you're able to, you know, draw parallels in your next
yeah.
experiences. So mm-hmm. let's talk a little bit about the next experiences that you as your t-shirt already gives it away, that's already something that you originally didn't know which direction it will take you. So how did you go about, or how did it come about of drawing you into Team WAS and you know, becoming an agent officially already? Is that something that we can talk about? Or I mean, this is not going to be aired until probably a couple of weeks, but I'm still for the listeners' sake, the first steps of going about and seeking out new opportunities and finding this
yeah.
new path, how did you start?
I think before I started, I had to kind of just find myself. Because, you know, when the pandemic retired me and, you know, you always tell yourself you want to take time off. But I quickly realized that probably wasn't the best thing to do, because taking time off, you just have time to sit in your thoughts and to sit in your emotions. And mm-hmm. that can be really hard. And, you know, but I didn't have much of a choice. Everything was shut down. You know, there was nothing going on in the world. So, you know, I tried to think about what I could see myself doing. And, you know, I would say this, though. Prior to retiring, the one, I don't want to say regret, because I don't like to live with regrets. But one thing I would have done is thought about this sooner or earlier, where, you know, instead of waiting till it's over, you know, kind of a few years before you feel like you could potentially retire, start thinking, start talking to people, start, you know, flirting with different ideas about what you could do next, so that way you can get a head start and kind of like figure it out as you go, where when you retire, you have all this pressure on yourself mentally to like figure out who you are afterwards, that it can overwhelm you at times. And I think for me personally, I've always wanted to stay a part of the game. I just didn't know from what avenue. And fortunately for me, I know some people in the agent business, really great people that I respect and admire. And they actually were the example for me, because I wasn't crazy about being an agent, because, you know, obviously there's like stereotype of what agents could be, and like the world of an agent, so to speak. And, you know, I believe myself to be a person of character and integrity. So I plan on channeling that and carrying that with me, you know, if I do end up becoming an agent. But right now I'm interning with Wasserman off of a relationship that I've had with someone. And it was more of a something that I was curious about. And I had the opportunity to like dive into it a little bit. And I immediately fell in love with it because it related so much to the game that I love. And it's like, I get to talk with basketball players. I get to travel. I get to meet new people. And it's like, it gives you that sense of, you know, I'm satisfying and feeding that adrenaline need and rush that I want, but you're just doing it from a different angle.
Yeah.
And it feels good to feel like you're part of the game and you're meeting new people and impacting the game and helping people. At the end of the day, you know, it's all about helping the next generation, right? I tried to maximize as much as I can about, you know, from this game of basketball. And now I've realized personally for me, I love the idea of being able to give back to the next generation and being able to help them accomplish their goals and reach their dreams and to play a role in that through my experiences, the goods and the bads. And I think in this business, that's what motivates me, right? The drive to like do good and to help prospects be the best versions of themselves and me able to do that through experience. And, you know, I've been interning here for the last 4 weeks and I love every part of it. It's super busy, a lot going on. It's fun work and I enjoy it. And I'm, you know, looking forward to potential opportunities that may come out of this.
Did you feel like you had to prove yourself again in a new avenue and like starting from scratch? Because like, I think also, because you're a humble person, you're definitely a person of high character and there's no doubt about it. That otherwise you wouldn't be on my podcast anyway. So.
I'll take that.
but like going back through that high character mentorship, you know, like you were mentored by your older brothers, then you mentored players who struggled in Europe that you could mentor them by having your experience and sharing your experience with them. And, you know, now you're going to mentor the next generation as well. So like that keeps you, like you are a person that reflects, that keeps you humble. You are able to reflect and parallel and see parallels. But then when you feel like you accomplished a lot in your career and you, I think that a lot of players can't assume that they're going to get that right away after they finished mm-hmm. their careers. You know, how did you stay humbled in the new situation coming in and then like, okay, now I basically have to prove myself again, like starting from like, basically it's not the same thing, but like you going like that year when you went to second division and you're like, that's a lot of pressure now to put on into that situation. And you have to really reestablish and help that club and to move the club up and then, you know, like make sure you guys stay in that league. So reestablishing yourself with a new identity and proving your worth to a new employer, let's say.
Yeah, I mean, luckily for me, I've you know, I always used to joke around and tell people like, you know, everybody saw me as this basketball player. And I'm like, you know, okay, in Europe, it's funny because I used to tell my wife all the time, like, you know, in Europe, I know more people, I have more connections than I do back home because I've spent the bulk of my career. So when I go back to America, I might know somebody, but I'm the new guy. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I went in with that mentality, like, it's not going to be the same, you know, like me approaching an opportunity in America is not going to be the same as if I were to be approaching an opportunity in Europe where I've been there for the last 14 years. People know me. I've been playing. They've seen me on TV. They've heard about me. Like, so I come from humble beginnings growing up, one. And two, I've never felt too proud to do something because I know that that's what got me where I am today. Mm. So it's like, you know, I didn't grow up with eating off of a silver spoon, the whole cliche statement. Yep. And, you know, I know what it's like to work towards something. So I've always told myself if at least I've tried to convince myself, right? Because you have those doubts and those fears that it's not going to pan out. But, you know, you just have to try to mentally stay strong and convince yourself, look, if you can do it for basketball, if you can come from nothing, you know what I'm saying? Pick up a ball. The first time you pick it up, you're terrible. You work on it for years and you become a pro, right? If I can do that as an athlete or as a sportsman, I should have the confidence to think that I can do that with life, you know, start from the beginning and not be too proud and not be too have too much of an ego to put myself above certain things, because, you know, I'm starting from the ground up. Like, I have to make relationships. I have to build trust, right? People have to trust me. People who I haven't been around in more than a decade have to say, okay, like, I'm going to choose this guy. Like, I want to be around this guy. So just learning to humble myself. So it's like life is like a roller coaster, right? Like you start low and then you get the highs, right? And you become successful and then you change fields, and then you have to be willing to slope down again and kind of like hang out in that low area, that low zone, until you build yourself back up. And I'm in that position right now where I'm not afraid. I'm not, you know, prideful about, you know, any job or any task that I might have to do in order to get myself out there to be seen and to be noticed. And, you know, I believe good people, you know, good things happen to good people. So I just hang my hat on that and work my butt off and, you know, wait for an opportunity to present itself. But it's not easy. It's hard. And it takes a lot. I would say that it takes a lot to be the guy now where you're chasing people. You know, when you're the athlete, everybody's calling you, hey, what's up? You know, now you have to be the guy chasing people.
Yeah.
Hey, what are you doing? Is there something available? Are there any opportunities? Do you know someone that might need some help?
Yeah.
So you go from being chased to being the chaser. And I think that's the hardest thing for a lot of players is, you know, being humble enough. And I don't even want to say humble. I think that's more being confident in your own character, right? And self-worth to be able to do that. And, you know, I found myself comfortable with doing that early on. And obviously it's paid off now.
Yeah, it's basically swallowing your pride to a certain degree, you know, whatever. Like some people have more pride, some people have less pride. But it's like you have to learn to look past it. It's the next step. You know, it's that's the thing that's the most difficult thing to do, is just that identity. The paradigm shift within the identity, you know, and a lot of people can't put that in perspective, but I'm glad you did. I'm glad you are on the way. I mean, you're
and embracing it.
Yeah.
Embracing it. Like right now I'm, you know, I train guys in the morning. I pick guys from the airport, you know, I'm grinding. I'm doing work that, you know, people used to do for me when I was a player, and I'm doing that now, picking guys up, dropping them off, taking them to get checkups, you know, organizing travel. And it's like, you know, these are things that were done for me over the last 14 years. And, you know, I'm okay with that because, one, I respect it, because I wouldn't be where I am today if people didn't do that for me.
Yeah.
So I've embraced it in that way where I'm like, there's worth in everything that you do. It's just, how do you see it? Like, do you have to be at the top of the worth, or are you okay with being productive but at a smaller scale? And I think when you embrace yourself and you're confident and you trust like who you are as a person, it doesn't matter where you are, because people recognize good character and quality people. And even if you're in a minimal role, you'll stand out.
Amen. Amen to that. Yeah. I shouldn't talk anymore, because I would probably just ruin it. No, Sammy, you know, like in Moscow, you mentioned me, our friendship there when we developed, like you helped me too. Like it wasn't easy for me either. Like I was trying to find my ways also. And I like the lack of vitamin D, also there was not much sunshine there, and it helped me a lot also to hang out with you. So I appreciate you, and I appreciate you coming on. Tell everyone how they can find you, if people want to find you, if you're not hard to find, like if you don't mind. I mean, you can just say
no, I don't mind. First of all, you're the man. I appreciate your friendship. Dennis is the guy. He's the guy. Super cool. Love the t-shirt, the tie-dye. I'm like, I've been like watching it the entire time. Like, that's so cool. But you can find me on Instagram at Sammy Mejia, at Sammy Mejia. Like, it's pretty straightforward. Twitter is the same. I'm not big of a Facebook guy, even though I have an account. So I'll just leave those two. And yeah, if you guys are interested, give me a follow, see what's going on, and hopefully get to meet some of you guys.
Yeah, I'm going to tag Bronx. I'm not going to tag Dominica. let me come back to that. Like, I'm not going to tag that. I mean, with all the respect to Dominican Republic, because I'm trying to visit every country. I'm trying to visit every country with all the athletes and coaches and everybody. And I'll continue to search for a Dominican tag. And now I'm going to tag the Bronx.
Okay. Tag the Bronx, the boogie down.
All right, Sammy, I appreciate it. Everybody, tune in to the Bennis podcast and subscribe if you liked it, and give Sammy a follow.
All righty. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. It was a blast.
All right.